It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 35 degrees under sunny skies. We're looking for a high of 38 today. Northwest wind 15 today. Increasing clouds overnight tonight with a low around 29. West wind to 15, could gust as high as 20. And cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 43. Coming up on the Midday News, the new federal COVID relief plan includes money for an expanded child tax credit. It also includes money for Alaska schools. We'll have stories about both of those things. Skiers and snowboarders had to be evacuated from a chairlift from Fairbanks in Ski Land. And Aaron Burmeister finished second in this year's Iditarod. Next year, he hopes to do better. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A 21-year-old man is now charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder for the mass shooting that claimed 10 lives in Boulder, Colorado yesterday. The victims range in age from 65 to 20 years old. They include the veteran police officer who was the first to arrive on scene after responding to a call about a shooting. Police Chief Maris Harold's voice shook today when she talked about Eric Talley, a father of seven.
I can tell you that he's a very kind man, and he didn't have to go into policing. He had a profession before this, but he felt a higher calling. And he loved this community. And he's everything that policing deserves and needs.
Talley was 51 years old. The attack in Boulder was the second mass shooting in the United States in less than a week, following gun violence that killed 8 people in the Atlanta area. President Biden is again pressing Congress to pass bipartisan gun control measures. But NPR's Tamara Keith reports despite a series of other high-profile mass shootings, there's been little legislative movement.
In so many ways, this has a feeling of repetition, that it keeps happening. This president and formerly the vice president made calls for bans on assault weapons. There's a reason that these things haven't passed. The politics, the composition of Congress, the strength of the gun lobby has changed. The politics of gun violence prevention.
NPR's Tamara Keith. Jury selection is complete in the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. NPR's Leila Fadel reports the process took over 2 weeks to finalize.
The court chose 15 jurors. 12 will sit on the jury and 2 will be alternates. The final person chosen, an accountant, will be dismissed Monday if the other 14 show up. Derek Chauvin, the white ex-police officer, is accused of murdering George Floyd, who was black. The trial is being streamed live, and Chauvin is being tried under intense public scrutiny. Video of Floyd's killing reignited a movement against racial injustice and police brutality. Jury selection took so long because of the high-profile nature of the case. And jurors were questioned on race, policing, and their politics. The jury is significantly more diverse than the largely white Minnesota county where Floyd died and Chauvin now stands trial. Opening statements are scheduled to begin on Monday. Leila Fadel, NPR News, Minneapolis.
27 million more doses of COVID-19 vaccines will be rolled out next week. The White House's senior response coordinator, Jeff Zients, informed governors 23 million will be the Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech shots, and the rest will be Johnson & Johnson. Unlike the other products given in 2 doses, the J&J vaccine is given in 1 shot. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has closed down more than 300 points, nearly 1%, ending at 32,423. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The third and most recent federal relief bill will bring the total amount of aid given to Alaska schools in the last year to over $500 million. The funds are meant to address emergency costs related to the pandemic and recovery from the pandemic. According to the Alaska Department of Education, the money must be spent by September 2023. Lacey Sanders, Administrative Services Director at the department, says the bill requires school districts to spend 20% of the funds on addressing learning loss.
This is the first time we've seen the federal guidance or the federal law outline a chunk of how the school districts actually have to spend that money.
Jim Anderson with the Anchorage School District says it doesn't address the district's normal budget problems. Before the federal funds came in, the district was facing a multi-million dollar shortfall.
That $28 million deficit was real. And it eventually, it's like kicking a snowball down a hill, and it keeps getting bigger, but it's still invisible to most people because the federal money makes it look like we're doing fine.
But Anderson says the federal funding buys lawmakers some time to figure out a better structure for education funding.
This general sense of comfort that they can focus on a lot of other priorities. And if you were to call the municipality or anyone else, all of the boroughs, they're also feeling the same sense of relief.
The University of Alaska also received federal funding that was split between direct aid to students and institutional spending. Interim President Pat Pitney says the funding was sorely needed, but thinks it will likely help the university just break even with pandemic-related costs. Pitney says the larger budget issue still remains.
The state budget reductions had even a more significant impact on enrollment than did COVID.
Most recently, the state reduced funding to the university system by $70 million, spread over 3 years. Pitney says the university will still need to fit into the smaller budget post-pandemic. Massive, huge, historic. That's how journalists, economists, and politicians are describing the most recent federal COVID relief plan, a $1.9 trillion bill that passed in Congress earlier this month. One significant part of the bill that's gotten a lot of attention is an expanded child tax credit. Alaska Public Media's Maiowa Aina reports economists and child advocates say the new bill could have a lasting impact on many American families.
All of the economists and leaders of child welfare organizations that I spoke to about the expanded child tax credit said the same thing.
We're excited for the new federal dollars.
We're super excited.
Very excited.
I think there is a lot to be excited about.
That last voice was University of Alaska economics professor Musin Ghatabi. He says the relief bill removes a lot of barriers to aid that typically come with bills like this. He says it's just a lot of money and a lot of people will be eligible for it.
My broad takeaway is massive injection. We've never seen anything like this, right? And so really well targeted towards lower income households, meaning in terms of the impact. The fact that there are advance payments and it's fully refundable is a game changer.
With the child tax credit, families could get as much as $300 per month per child starting in July. Even people who don't normally get the tax credit because they had no income in the last year could potentially qualify for these funds. And it's a direct payment, no strings attached. Kind of like the stimulus payments lots of people are seeing pop up in their bank accounts. Ghatabi says that's a big deal, too.
And that's the part that potentially makes a dent in terms of people's finances.
It is a temporary stimulus, but Ghatabi says those extra funds, particularly for low-income people, will stretch. There is clear research that even a one-time boost to a family's income could totally change the trajectory of a person's life, Ghatabi says. Finally, being able to buy a car, for example, could lead to a better job and more earnings over time. It could also simply mean less trips to the food bank, says Trevor Storrs.
When you have a family that struggles, not just day to day, but at times hour by hour, $200 feels like winning the lottery.
Storrs is the CEO and president of the Alaska Children's Trust, which advocates for child welfare in Alaska. Storrs says in addition to the child credit, other components of the bill, like more money for food stamps and money for child care, will also contribute to Alaska children's well-being. Stephanie Berglund is CEO of Thread Alaska, which advocates on behalf of child care providers in the state. Berglund is anticipating over $92 million in child care support and relief for Alaska from the most recent aid packages. That's enough money, Berglund says, to boost the child care industry to function better than it did before the pandemic.
There's an opportunity so that child care can be more accessible and more affordable for families. Early educators can be paid a livable wage, you know, and we have a stronger overall transformed child care system.
Other organizations are thinking about the long-term impact of these short-term funds, too. Clark Halverson is CEO of the United Way of Anchorage. He says calls to the 211 helpline are still 300% higher than normal, even a year into the pandemic. People need help with childcare, food, and rent relief. But Halverson says the pandemic just made an existing problem even worse. Halverson hopes these federal funds will start to address the root problems that have caused so many Alaskans to struggle in the last year.
We often talk about when are we going to get back to normal. We're trying to kind of change that dialogue a little bit and say we really want to create a new normal, one where people have equal opportunity.
Details about how the funding will be distributed and individual eligibility requirements are still coming. But most are in agreement that it will make a significant difference for families in Alaska, especially those that continue to struggle the most. In Anchorage, I'm Mayowa Aina.
Skiers and snowboarders had to be evacuated from a chairlift over the weekend at a ski area north of Fairbanks. Peter Butieri with the Fairbanks Ski Patrol says the lift at Ski Land stopped late in the day Saturday, and when operators realized it could not be restarted quickly, Ski Patrol and mountain staff began using pre-deployed equipment to carry out an evacuation procedure they regularly train for.
We have a line launcher that we can shoot a line over the lift cable. We use that to pull up a larger rope and a little wooden seat that folks can scoot onto, and we can belay them down.
Butieri estimates about 80 people were evacuated from the chairlift from as high as 40 feet off the snow. He says no one suffered any injuries, but some skiers and snowboarders were on the lift for nearly 2 hours in windy, cold conditions.
There were some folks that were chilly.
The parking lot and lodge are at the top of the mountain at Ski Land, and Butieri says the evacuated either walked or were pulled to the top by snow machines and a snowcat. He says it had been a few years since the last time the lift had to be evacuated. According to Ski Land Facebook posts, the area was closed since Sunday and today. They say the problem that stopped the chairlift Saturday was fixed, but a related issue with the lift backup motor was still being addressed. Aaron Burmeister finished second in the 2021 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, reaching the finish line in Deschke Landing just 3 hours after Dallas Seavey, the now five-time Iditarod champion. KNOM's Sophia DeSalvo spoke with Burmeister about his team's Iditarod performance this year and what it will finally take to bring home the gold.
Aaron Burmeister has been racing the Iditarod for the past 27 years and has finished in the top five 7 times, but he has yet to win. In a year where everything was largely affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, mushing was no exception. However, for Burmeister, this meant dedicating even more time to training for the last great race.
So it did change up the training, and the focus and the training on the dogs that we've always had was still there solidly, but we certainly spent a lot more time with them and on the trail this winter, because there was nothing else to do and we didn't get out and do any socializing.
A critical change made to this year's Iditarod was its shortened route, which Burmeister felt really transformed the race, especially without the usual finish in his hometown of Nome.
You know, it's a different event when you're not going to Nome. It felt like a gold trail loop. It was certainly a world-class dog race, but it wasn't the Iditarod, or it didn't feel like the Iditarod, because you didn't have the villages, you didn't have the people and the friends on the Yukon River and on the coast, and it just being a different trail.
Despite the changes to the 2021 race route, Burmeister acknowledges that adapting to different conditions on the trail is a major part of mushing. As far as strategy goes, Burmeister stressed that the best approach, period, is to run your own dog team within their capabilities and how they were trained. The veteran musher had trained his team using two schedules, a passive one and a more aggressive one. The night before the race began, Burmeister opted to take the passive schedule,
which was to stack my rest early in the race, stop at Nikolai for an eight, and get behind the lead pack. It would, by taking an eight early, it puts me immediately 4 hours behind the leaders. And that allowed me to have a trail ahead of me and let the front runners go out there and wear their dogs out some and set the trail.
While a pack of seven or eight competitive teams pushed CV in the front, Burmeister hung back in the shadows, keeping his team well-rested and strong before making his move.
I was 4 hours behind him, and knowing in the back of my mind that my schedule by Nikolai would come back together and even out with Dallas's, which it did. On the way back between McGrath, Nikolai, and Roan, I launched by a lot of the teams that were up there racing hard and was right back in the hunt with Dallas. And that was part of the plan of that schedule. So it went like clockwork.
Toward the end, however, Burmeister realized he needed more time and more mileage to be able to overtake Seavey. But with only 150 miles to the finish, Burmeister executed his final big move in his run from Roan to Squintna, making up some time on Dallas, but ultimately falling short in the end. By all accounts, this year's Iditarod performance is one of Burmeister's best. But his mindset after a second-place finish demonstrates what a fierce and elite competitor he really is.
So I didn't win this year's race. I was second place. Yes, on paper, it looks like my best race. I think I've run just as good or better races in the past and fell short. But for my mind, I've got to take that gamble. I've got to take that shot at winning. And whether I'm second or fifth or tenth, if I'm not winning, it really doesn't matter to me. My goal was to win, and that's something I've dreamed of.
Burmeister is back home in Nenana after the 2021 Iditarod, but his sights are set on returning to Nome in 2022.
Next year is our 50th anniversary. I'm planning on that being my last Iditarod, but my goal is to bring the victory home to Nome next year. We'll be just as focused, train just as tough of a dog team, and hopefully be able to bring that victory home to Nome.
Reporting in Nome, I'm Sophia DeSalvo.
Petersburg's community risk level was lowered again yesterday, and the local emergency operations center says the COVID-19 outbreak there appears to be over. The EOC announced a downgrade to yellow status, which means officials think there's a low risk of COVID spread in the community. A press release from the EOC says the positivity rate for people being tested has dropped to below 1%, and fewer people are seeking tests. Petersburg still has 8 active cases, but hasn't had a reported new case since last Monday. Local health officials are still asking the community to follow the local face covering mandate in public spaces and to keep up social distancing for people outside their households. Monday's announcement comes exactly 1 month after the EOC raised the risk level to red in response to an outbreak that ended up infecting about 100 people in the community of Petersburg. Petersburg schools returned to in-person classes on Monday, following a week-long spring break and 3 weeks of remote learning. Alaska state troopers have sent human remains found in the burnt-out home of Port Protection resident Gary Mohlberger to the state medical examiner's office for identification. A trooper dispatched Monday said the state's deputy fire marshal ruled that the blaze that destroyed Mohlberger's home was an accident. Mohlberger has not been seen since before the fire. He was a featured cast member of the National Geographic reality TV show Life Below Zero, Port Protection, which chronicles daily life for residents of the remote community on the north end of Prince of Wales Island in southeast Alaska. Residents of Port Protection reported the 75-year-old Mohlberger's death Thursday. Port Protection show producers and the official show page offered condolences Thursday afternoon as well. A spokesperson for the state troopers added Monday that the next of kin are being kept apprised of the situation.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. It's Back to the Future for canned pink salmon. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Canning salmon in Alaska started in the 1870s, and by the early 20th century, it was the state's largest industry, generating 80% of the territorial tax revenues. Its position in the state economy is one that oil enjoys today. Now, the COVID pandemic has pushed record sales for canned salmon as more Americans choose it for its health benefits and as an easy-to-use ingredient.
Suddenly, there was double the demand for an item that's normally very predictable.
John Daly is manager of domestic canned sales for OBI Seafoods, Alaska's largest canned producer. For over 100 years, its 9 legacy brands have been sold regionally throughout the U.S.
It's not like the Alaska seafood counter at these grocery stores. The canned fish business is the grocery business. It's a center store aisle item. It's the best ability is availability. That was really important at that point because consumers were willing to buy anything and everything that was shelf stable and canned.
It was a challenge last year to keep the retail shelves stocked, and Daly says sales have slowed to more normal levels.
Normal isn't pre-pandemic levels anymore. It's about a 10% increase from that. So that obviously means we've gotten in front of more people, and they've made repeat purchases. You know, we want to capitalize on that.
Most of the canned salmon sales have been driven by older Americans. Daly says a goal is to appeal to younger buyers.
And that's a longer-term goal. Maybe not a canned item. Maybe it's a pouch, grab-and-go snack. Maybe it's flavor added.
He's convinced that canned pinks have the staying power to remain as one of Alaska's most well-known historical products.
Ever since I've been in the industry, I've heard from everybody that canned salmon is dying, and here we are with record numbers.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 23rd day of March, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:01. It won't set again until 8:31, giving us 12 hours and 30 minutes of daylight. That is a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high was 55, set in 1965, and our record low was 4 degrees, set in 1975, currently 35 degrees. A lot of fives there. Mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 38, northwest wind to 15, but increasing clouds tonight, low of about 29 tonight, west wind to 15 with gusts as high as 20. And for tomorrow, cloudy skies, high near 43, west wind to 15, gusting as high as 25. And we're looking for those winds to turn to the south on Wednesday night. Mostly cloudy skies on Thursday with a high near 42, southwest winds to 10 miles per hour. We have an outgoing tide right now. Here on the east side, we have a low tide coming up at 5:27 p.m. That will be a 1.2-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 12:27 a.m. of 5.7 feet. Our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 5:04 and 3.9 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 5:55 p.m., again with the fives. That's going to be a 3.5-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 12:45 a.m. of 13.4 feet, and your low tide for the west side for tomorrow morning will be at 6:11 and be a 7.2-foot tide. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,005 millibar low, 110 nautical miles southeast of Middleton Island will exit into the eastern Gulf by Tuesday evening. A weak low pressure will linger in the northern Gulf through Thursday morning. So, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory through Wednesday. North wind to 25 knots right now. Will turn to the west this afternoon, seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, southwest wind to 30 knots and seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof and Kodiak's west side, small craft advisory through Wednesday. For right now, northwest 30, seas to 5 feet. Tonight, west 30, seas to 7 feet with freezing spray in the Shelikof. And for tomorrow, southwest 30, seas to 9 feet and freezing spray in the morning in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For Chiniac Bay, northwest 20, diminishing to 10 knots this afternoon. For tonight, look for west winds to 10 knots, increasing to 15 knots after midnight. Gust to 25 knots after midnight in Chiniac Bay, seas to 2 feet. For Wednesday and Wednesday night, southwest 15, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory through Wednesday. For tonight, west winds to 25 knots and seas to 10 feet in Marmot Bay. For Wednesday, look for southwest 30, seas to 11 feet. And for Wednesday night in Marmot Bay, look for southwest winds to 25 knots and seas to 8 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tonight. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. The meeting's open to the public and will be broadcast right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. And for more information, call the clerk at 486-8636. The Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Wednesday, tomorrow at 12 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. This meeting is also open to the public and will be web-streamed. The meeting link, agendas, and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. To request paper copies or for more information, call the Harbor Department at 486-8080. The City Council will be holding its regular meeting on Thursday. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's much-used multi-purpose room. This meeting is open to the public as well. We'll be broadcast right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. Agendas and meeting packets are available online, City of Kodiak website. And for more information, call the clerk, 486-8636. On Wednesday, the Mission Lake Tidegate Service Area Board will be having their public budget hearing. That's happening tomorrow, 1 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Also tomorrow, at 6:30 p.m. in Bayside Fire Hall, Service Area Number 1 Board will be having their public budget hearing and regular meeting. Again, that's 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. And on Thursday, at 6:30 p.m., the Borough Assembly will be having their work session. The Borough Assembly work session, Bayside Fire Hall, 6:30 p.m. on Thursday. Senior Citizens of Kodiak Board of Directors will be holding a regular meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 1 p.m. in the center's multi-purpose room. Masks and social distancing will be required. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call 486-6181. Attention all mariners, bring your sea stories to Comfish, Alaska. Our stories pull our community together, and while we can't wait to get you back on that Comfish stage, this year we hope to see you from the other side of the video screen. In the spirit of Alaska fishing community resiliency, the virtual trade show and forum are fully interactive and immersive. The Kodiak Chamber of Commerce will feature pre-recorded stories during virtual receptions at 5 p.m. on March 30th and 31st. So, please help them capture and share a few of the many stories that make up the fabric of our rich maritime history by recording a 3 to 5 minute fish tale either onto your smartphone or computer. If you are using a phone, please hold it sideways. Email the stories to Teresa Peterson, that's Teresa, T-H-E-R-E-S-A, at akmarine.org, and Phil Lampron, that's phil.lampron, at kodiakhealthcare.org, by March 26th. And you want to visit the comfishalaska.com site for continual updates and more information. And we're going to have on our Talk of the Rock, we're going to be talking to Sarah Phillips about Comfish. So stay tuned for that at 12:30. The Kodiak Public Library is closed next Monday, March 29th, for Stewards Day. The library's Winter Reading Challenge ends Wednesday, March 31st. Log your minutes on the Beanstack Reading Challenge posted on the library's webpage and Facebook page. Call the library at 486-8686 if you need help logging in. Also, the library is open for two-hour visits Monday through Thursday at 10 a.m., 12:30 p.m., 3 p.m., and 5 p.m., and Friday and Saturday at 10 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 3 p.m. Appointments are no longer required, but you still have to wear a mask and follow social distancing guidelines. For more information about any of this, call the Kodiak Public Library at 486-8686.
"58% of Alaskan women experience intimate partner or sexual violence in their lifetime. This impacts our entire community. We have the courage to prevent, protect, and heal. When Kodiak chooses respect, we become a stronger community. Join the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center in a social media challenge to promote community wellness and raise awareness of the impact of domestic and sexual violence. To find out how to participate, find KWRCC on Facebook and help us show that Kodiak chooses respect."
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.